Chema, before I begin, one sincere request to keep the videos off because it gets distracting. It also picks up the sound. So please keep the videos off. Now, a little bit of background, because today we are starting a new series, an unexpected series, as some would say, but expected if seen from the other perspective. So it's a series on the Bhagavad Puran or the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the little personal background is that, since almost 2000, when I first traveled abroad, a lot of people were asking me about the stories, which came very spontaneously. Now, I have been savoring these stories as a child. And I can literally say that of all these stories, Sri Krishna especially has been like a friend and a bedfellow, literally. Because I would sleep with Laddu Gopalji's little image till almost, doll idol, till almost 8, 9, 10 years of age, till one day my parents got a little scared and took it away, and that was the moment I cried and cried and cried bitterly. But then to discover that Krishna is within us. But that's the little background of love with Krishna, just as Mother Saraswati has been the goddess whom I sort of worshipped, and Sri Krishna loved like a friend till Mother and Aurobindo came, and they, of course, in their oceanic surge, everything went away or became one with them. So these stories have been coming, and people have been asking to write or speak about them, but time was the constraint. Mother Aurobindo's works are of paramount importance, and that's how I was guided, that Mother Aurobindo's words I have to speak. Of late, the need or demand for stories was growing, till one day, I think few months back, when it was pressed upon by none other than Madan Gopalji. Now, of course, he's a very dear friend, but more than being a dear friend, his name did some magic. So I said, if Madan Gopal himself is wanting that I should take up the stories, I think I should take them up. But still, I have to wait for Mother's guidance, Mother's instruction. So it has to come like a clear-cut date, everything. And this has been going on for 25 years, this story. And what better way to take the stories than from the Srimad Bhagavatam, which Sri Aurobindo and the Mother both have ranked among the very profound and high occult scriptures. Sri Aurobindo had exceptional, he has written exceptional words for both the Vishnu Puran and the Bhagavat Puran as profound occult scripture. The Mother said the rishis of the Bhagavat were very deep in occult and spiritual knowledge, and they had experienced all the worlds they have written about in the Bhagavad, she says, that are real and true. And she goes on to say that, well, whether people talk about historical evidence of Krishna, but if you ask me, then Krishna is real and living, and that's how he comes across in the Bhagavad. The historical Krishna is there, which becomes the basis, as we'll see, but it's Krishna is much more than what we see. And we know that Sri Krishna and Sri Aurobindo's and the Mother's relation, there is a very touching, interesting episode where the Mother would walk in the corridor with Sri Krishna, and she would often say that when she went back, sometimes it would be Krishna on whose shoulder she would just put her head. And then she says, it was Sri Aurobindo's way of showing himself to me. And because Sri Aurobindo is absorbed in the room for meditation, and she would walk, she's walking with concentration on the supramental, she is walking with Krishna. And then one day Sri Aurobindo started walking with her. So, and one day Sri Aurobindo also withdraws, and she says, I was so much in bliss that I couldn't take up the work. So she says, first Sri Krishna, then Sri Aurobindo, then the Supreme. She she would walk with the Supreme. So this is a little background. The deep, intimate relation of Mother and Sri Aurobindo, their experiences with Sri Krishna are too many to be recounted. And that's not the object of the Bhagavad Puran anyways. But as this was going on, few months back, the suggestion came from Madan Gopalji. And I was wondering whether I should or I should not, waiting for an indication. Then it came that, well, this is the 1 year we are entering into the 1 year of the anniversary of the Siddhi Day. Siddhi Day is, as we know, 24th November 1926. So from 25, we enter into 1 year of the anniversary. So it came that this is the best time because one of the events of Siddhi Day is Sri Krishna's personality fusing with Sri Aurobindo. It just came as a very clear light. But when, what was still uncertain, and then the date flashed as 9th December. And I was wondering why 9th December, and then the whole thing came very clearly. And that I'll share first. So the occasion of the Bhagavat is basically that Sri Krishna has withdrawn. He has gone to his abode. And so the world is left bereft of the physical presence of the avatar. And that's the time the rishis gather in Naimisharanya. Naimisharanya is where now modern Sitapur, or that's what they say in Uttar Pradesh, it's a forest. Aranya means forest, Naimish means a moment. And it is said that Naimisharanya is the place where the Sudarshan Chakra, which is the dynamic light of the divine, stopped. And it stopped because, well, time stands still. It's a moment where you have a rendezvous with the eternal. So that's the place which is supposed to be a very holy place. It is. I have been there actually. And the very interesting part is that it has the heart of Mata Sati. So it's also a place where it's blessed by Shakti. Mata Sati, when you know that story of the 51 Shakti Peeth, and the heart has fallen there. So it's a very special place where sages would gather, perform sacrifices, do the rituals, Vedic Yajna, all this was going on there. So all the sages gather that now that Sri Krishna is not there, world is going to go backward suddenly, and what are we going to do? There must be some way. So they are thinking of what would be best, because Sri Krishna had embodied the Vedas, the Upanishads and something more. So he gave something more. So what is the way out? And then they chance upon me. There is a series of events that we'll talk about subsequently. That, well, for this age when there is darkness, the way out is Sri Krishna's story as the Bhagavat Puran. Now, if we go back to the story itself, who was the first one who spoke of the Bhagavat? Well, it is Sri Krishna himself who gave the Bhagavat Puran to Lord Brahma. And Lord Brahma then, his children, first born of Brahma, mental children of Brahma, Sanakadi Krishi. There are four of them. Some say five, some say six, some even say seven. But basically four. We have the four heads of Brahma, so we can take it that four. They are, because they are mental children of Brahma. And they represent the four quarters. They represent the four levels of existence of the one Purusha. And they are the ones who were first born of Brahma, and they were asked by their father to create, go ahead and create. So it's a very fascinating story actually. So I'm just sharing this. So Sanakadi Krishis refuse. Now you see, father's command is refused by the children right away. That's the boldness of our scriptures. Why? Because to create, you have to have a progeny. Means you have to get into marriage and all the rest that entails. So they turn back and say, we are not going to do it. So there are two kinds of srishtis which Brahmaji is known to have given. One is a srishti which is not maithuni srishti, where there is no sexual reproduction involved. And the other which becomes a maithuni srishti, where you have the Manu and Shatrupa and all this story. So we are part of the Maithuni Srishti, and now when we look at what Sri Aurobindo is bringing about, is going back to the original, where the Srishti will be without the Maithuna, without the sexual process. So it's completing an entire cycle which Brahmaji has started. So these are the four rishis who are supposed to be always immersed in Hari's, Lord Hari's name, and they give it to Narad. Now, why they give to Narad? There is a little story about it. So, as we know that Puranas are a world of stories. All of them are very deeply symbolic stories. So, as it happens that Naradji one day is strolling around, And when he comes to earth, he always feels the pain because Nar is water and Da is Danam. So he gives all the water that he receives from Kshirsagar. So all the waters of Kshirsagar, the ocean of milk, he has got the exceptional privilege of Samipya and Salokya of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Being lying in the cosmic waters. And from there, whatever he receives, he brings to earth. Sri Aurobindo describes him beautifully in Savitri as the, as Narad comes down, he speaks of Vishnu and his births. And as he comes to earth, he discovers all the pain and suffering. And he sees the demons who wait. This also is part of Bhagavata, demons waiting for the Lord's touch so that they can be released of their burden. So let me not skip the stair, how the demons weep and all this there in the Bhagavat. So this, as Narad is the one who receives the waters or the prasad or the charnamrit of the Lord, whichever way we want to put it, or the wisdom from the Kshirsagar. Kshirsagar is the ocean of light, basically. And he brings it to earth and men. So he is thinking that, as he is strolling, suddenly he sees a very old woman approach him. And the old woman is, they don't approach him, he sees an old woman weeping. And she is old, but still there is a glow on her face. And there are two young boys by her side who are almost dead, comatose. So Narad is moved by compassion, as is his nature. That's why he is the divine messenger. So he asks them that, what has happened to you? Can I relieve your suffering? He says, we don't know how you can relieve our suffering, but I am Bhakti. Now you see, the symbol starts right away. So the old lady says, I am Bhakti, and these are my two children. They are Jnana and Vairagya. And because the Lord has withdrawn from the world, though I am still there as a connecting link, but in the absence of Jnana and Vairagya, my two children who are meant to help me move on and remain young, I have become old. Now you see, bhakti without jnana, bhakti without detachment can become very blind, almost fanatic, dangerous. So jnana and vairagya are the limbs. It starts, big bang start of the Bhagavad. So Narad says, oh, I can understand. So what can I do? I'll find out a way for you to come out of this state. So Narad goes and consults many Rishi Munis. So all of them say, we have no solution to it, because when the Lord himself is not there physically, what can we do? And they try Vedic yagyas, they try the Upanishadic, the Karmakanda, the various rituals, everything. But Bhakti's condition remains same and these two remain the same. So Narad is wondering that what can be a solution to this? So he does his own tapasya and meditates upon the Lord. So he is one of those who has a free access. And in response, Brahmaji, or rather his mental children, Sanakadik Rishi, and they are called Sanat Kumar. Sanat means eternally young. So you see, aging has something to do with the sexual reproduction, and that's a different subject altogether. Again, I will talk on this. So they appear, they are eternally young. They are always like a five-year-old child. So they are also called as Chatva Kumara. They are the four Kumaras, forever young. So they appear, they are very glowing in form, and they say, we know your problem. And when he narrates the problem, he says, no, nothing can revive them except for the Srimad Bhagavat Puran. So he says, what is it about the Bhagavat Puran, and how to, how do I get that Puran? And then again, so-called chance event, but divine coincidence, he chances upon this Purana, where it's going on. And the first person who has spoken about this Purana, I'll come to that story, where a story is narrated that how this Puran is so effective. So the first time this Puran was revealed was by Shukdev to Parikshit. That's also a very fascinating story. So Shukdev is, at least I find this story is very fascinating, so I'm sharing my joy. So Shuk means parrot. So once Shivji wants to reveal the highest secret, See, in this story, everybody will come. Brahma will come, Shivji will come, Vishnu Bhagwan will come, and Krishna is there, and all of them. Whole Sachidanand is there. So Shiva says, I want to narrate the greatest secrets to you. O Parvati, come with me. So he goes into a cave and he says, all the gods, celestial beings, they should go away. Nobody should be there. So he starts narrating the greatest, highest secrets of existence to Mata Parvati. But Mata Parvati is, you know, the whole story is that though she is the divine mother, she has taken a form in material creation. Then through that she grows and develops, does her own yoga and comes to Shiva, as said, half in ignorance and half in the light. And she goes off to sleep. But as it happens that there is a little parrot there. And parrot's little baby is delivered out of the egg of the parrot. Egg was there and the baby is delivered. I mean, a parrot had delivered the egg and gone away. And then out of the egg, this little parrot comes. So right from the beginning, he is the recipient of this entire discourse between Shiva and Parvati. Now when Shiva tells Parvati that while you keep saying so that I know you are awake. So she keeps saying Now she sleeps. And this little parrot, which is enjoying the story, starts doing this humming sound to make sure that Shiva goes on. Because he, you know, Shiva, this is a Leela, nothing else. So as he keeps saying, because parrots can make the same sound. And Shiva keeps narrating the story while Parvati is sleeping. When he finishes the story, which is not the story, but the greatest secrets of existence, suddenly he sees that Parvati ji is asleep. So he says, who is the one who was making the sound? And he discovered that parrot. Now Shiva is Shiva. He says, how dare somebody has disobeyed me? And the parrot flies and he enters into the, through the mouth of Vyas Rishi's wife, who is yawning in sleep. Now all this is symbolic, but because every story symbol is fascinating. So he enters, the parrot enters into the womb. How he enters into the womb through the mouth? Basically, you have to understand, he enters the womb. Yawning means there is a moment of unconsciousness, basically. And during that time, he enters the womb. Now he won't come out. Shiva will not destroy a womb. So he says, you come out. You come out, I am going to destroy, because this is a knowledge which is not meant for anybody. It is a knowledge only meant for Mata Parvati. He keeps on remaining there for a long time. So he entered the consciousness of, you know, the Shakti of Vyas. And he remains there. She is holding this little wisdom which is growing inside, brewing inside. And as it is that after 12 years, again, Narad must intervenes and he says, leave it, no, because maybe this is how destiny has operated. So Shiva goes and Vyas Rishi has to tell him, you can come out now. You're safe. So he comes out. So he is Shukdev. Now Shukdev is known to be, he has got all the wisdom right from childhood. And though Vyas is his father, both characters are intimately connected with this Bhagavat Puran. But we'll come to that story later. But Shukdev is known to be highest in his realizations. So while this beautiful poetry, it's a poetry. I'll read what Sri Aurobindo writes about it. It's composed by Rishi Vedavyas. Now, Vedavyas is again a lineage. So, he is Krishna Dvayapayan Vyas, which is Krishna because his color was dark. And Dvayapayan because he was born in an island. So, Krishna of the isle. That's how Sri Aurobindo writes in one of his poems, Mahatma. So Krishna of the isles. So Krishna of Dvapayan, Vyas. And Vyas is a whole lineage. And Rishi Vedavyas is, is called Vyas. Vyas is somebody who codifies, organizes things. And so he codified the Vedas. So Vedas were originally one literature. And he codified them into four Vedas. The Rig Veda, the Samaveda, Yajurveda, the Atharveda, there is an overlap, like certain rituals of the Rig Veda which could be sung, or of Yajurveda which could be sung, are there in the Samveda, Samhitas. So he is the codifier. That's how he earns the name Vyas. So he is also attributed with, of course, the Mahabharata. So somebody who has codified the Vedas, which are the backbone of everything, and who has, of Sanatan Dharma, and someone who has also been credited by the greatest epic of all times, Mahabharata, both in its magnitude, in its length, in its scope. So he is still restless. So something is gnawing at him, and he is wondering, what is it that is left, as if there is something left to do. So he, as he is restlessly moving around the river Saraswati before it went underground, so Narad says, I know why you are restless. So you see, from Sankadik Narad, and Narad has to now give it to Vyas. So he says, I know why you are restless. So he says, pray tell me why I am restless. Because I thought I have written everything that is needed. Somebody who has read the Vedas, who is Pandit of Vedas, who has codified the Vedas, he himself should be, never should a seed of restlessness come into him. He says, you know, what have you written about Krishna in the Vedas, in the Mahabharata? So in the Mahabharata, if you read, there is only one word that Vyasa has used for Krishna. That word contains everything. But you have to read through it. That is aparimeya, immeasurable. He doesn't say Krishna is a god. And if you read through, all the stories of Krishna come from Bhagavad Puran and from Harivansh, some of them. So in the Mahabharata, you don't have that, all that leela. It has been later put in, the way it is described. So he says, he's called him aparimeya. So he says, have you written something about the aparimeya, that which transcends everything? And yet, though he transcends everything, the whole cosmos is within him, and yet he took a human birth and did the leela. He says, no. He says, that is the reason why you are, there is something else which is still waiting to emerge. So Vyas Rishi sat on the river and by the river side, and he wrote, composed the Srimad Bhagavat Puran. And the first person to whom he gave it was to his son Sukhdev. So Sukhdev became the first one, and later on a whole tradition started. So in the actual Bhagavat Puran, you will see that later on Sutji is to Sanakadik Rishi, but will Sonakadik Rishi, but that comes later. So Sukhdev narrated it to King Parikshit. Now King Parikshit, as we know, that after the Mahabharata, there are basically 6 survivors. There are 18, but well, let's come to. So the 5 Pandavas, all of them are again a kind of new creation. They are not entirely born of the physical mother and the physical act. You see, again we come to that, the importance and many things in that. Anyway, so all of them are born of the something which is not just physical. There is surely a physical act involved, but something much more than that. And Parikshit is the grandson of Arjun, who dies in the womb of Uttara, Abhimanyu's wife, because Ashwatthama has used the Brahmastra to kill. He wants to destroy even the seed of the Pandavas. And Shri Krishna revives him back. So basically, again, it's a kind of a new creation which is not exactly or entirely through the normal process. So Parikshit, now as the story goes, that Parikshit is ruling the kingdom, and as he goes, there's a lot of stories. We'll come to Parikshit's other stories later. But he is given a curse because Kali, the effect of Kali starts on his head. And he disrespects a rishi who is in meditation. And his son curses him that 7 days down the line you are going to die. Bit by a snake. What was the snake? He had put a dead snake on the neck of the rishi. because he said, you are not listening to me, I am thirsty and you are absorbed in your meditation. So in anger he had put insultingly. So the Rishi's son says, you will die after 7 days with the snake, same snake bite. So now he has 7 days. So what can you do in 7 days? So all his ministers advise him that, see, we will shut you in such a packed, watertight way. Forget snake, even a fly cannot enter. We'll make sure. What about the curse? You are the king. We'll make sure. We'll keep you inside. But then he is having the fear. Point is that death can come through any door, as it does come eventually through a strange way. But it is, and that's the story behind stories. Puranas are fascinating world of stories. So, but then he doesn't know what to do, and that's when Shukdev comes and says, you know, the solution to your problem is not all what these ministers are suggesting. He's not making sure that you have all the vaccination against snake, you have the doctors, you have, you know, emergency services. That's not your solution. He says, what is the solution? He says, listen to the story that I am going to tell you, the story of Bhagavat. He says, what will happen with this story? I know it is a story about my own. Arjun is there, his grandfather. And then he gets interested also. Tell me about that story about my grandfather. That's how it would start. And Krishna, about whom I have heard. He says, see, this story will liberate from you all fear of death. So with the fear of death gone, then you will understand that death is only an appearance. You will discover your immortal self, and therefore it will free you from death itself. Because what we are afraid of is that death is an end. When you know there is no death. So that's how you annihilate death. In Savitri there is a line where Savitri says, oh death, I have conquered you within. Because I have discovered my immortal soul. I know that you don't exist, but yet she has to fight because of mankind in the grip of ignorance. So it goes that he hears for 1 week the story and he is released from the bonds of ignorance. He discovers his immortal self. But now coming back to the story of Narad and Sankadik Rishi, they tell a very interesting story, which is what we'll take up mainly today. Again, see the symbols. Bhakti, old woman, two young children who hear the story. Bhakti becomes very glowing and she's full of glow after hearing the story. And both the son become young again. So Bhakti asks a question before we come to that other story. She asks a question that, where will I reside now? Give me a place, because this is Kali Yuga. Now I am too good. she is full of the glow, divine glow. Where can I reside? Give me a place to reside. Because Kali is everywhere. And so Shukdev tells her, you reside in the heart of the devotees. And wherever you reside, nothing can touch you. No effect of evil, no effect of wickedness, nothing. So since then, Bhakti took shelter in the heart of the devotee where the Lord is dwelling. That's how the story goes. So Sankadik Rishi explained to Narad the greatness of the scripture through another story, through our story. So the story goes that there is a, see the symbol, in names the symbols will come. Because if we read it just as a story, they will appear absurd. Like, you know, Shukdev remaining 12 years in the womb. Now what is the womb? It's the womb of ignorance. So he takes, because he's no ordinary, you know, a parrot which has learned the highest secret is no more an ordinary parrot. That's what Narad Rishi tells. He has become immortal. You can't do anything to him anyways. So he is no ordinary parrot, and so he has learnt all this. Now you see, we'll just for a moment touch upon the symbol of the story. So the parrot enters into the womb of Rishi Vyas' wife and he stays for 12 years. Now which child stays in the womb for 12 years? So basically, parrot. Now what has she done? She has received from Vyas, learnt all the things. But that's not enough. All of this must go through a brewing period so we can apply it in everyday life. It's not enough to read Sri Aurobindo and the mother. It's not enough to read a scripture. And Sri Aurobindo also speaks about 12 years in one of the plays needed to purify. So it has to go inside, become the stuff of our existence. It should be nourished by our actions, by our flesh and blood and everything. That's how a child is nourished. So the knowledge that we receive as word knowledge or the scriptural knowledge or let's say reading of the life divine, Savitri or any scripture, it's not enough just to recite it like a parrot. That won't work. Shiva will destroy. It has to go inside and be nourished and nurtured like in the womb of ignorance, and then it comes out as a full-blown knowledge which Shukdev, he becomes a deva and he is holding it all within himself. So this is the symbol of that story. So here again we have another interesting symbol after Bhakti story, Shukdev story. So the symbol is, the story is that he says once upon a time there was a Brahmin whose name was Atmadev. Now you see, name is very interesting. Whose wife was Dhundali. And they had two children. Now I'm not going into all the details. One was called Dhundakari. And the other was called Gokarna. You see, if you just know the names and the meaning, much of it will be clear. So, as the story goes, Atmadev is a very pious person. He is pandit, everything. But, you know, he is very attached to his wife. So, he wants to make sure he fulfills all her wishes. So, he goes, he does all his lecture, pandit, everything. But he wants to, you know, ultimately take care of his wife. Nothing wrong with that. But one day the wife says, see, everything is there, but our angan is suna-suna. We don't have a child. So he says, yes, you know so much literature. What is the use if you don't have a child? He says, okay, I'll ask, because knowing of literature and scripture doesn't help me get a child. For that, I have to meet a yogi. So always in India, there was always scriptural knowledge and what is beyond the scripture. Always. Direct experience, direct perception, that is the true knowledge. Scripture will lay a foundation you can take inside like a parrot and allow it to brew inside. But ultimately, he goes to yogi. So yogi tells him, I know that you want a child. But I'll tell you one thing. Don't try to push destiny. Force it. Don't force it. It is so true. It is not. Savitri doesn't force destiny blindly. She's doing it for the whole world. So we must understand that there are things denied by fate. If you try to push it by the desired self, by a vital will, it doesn't bring good results. That's why surrender, acceptance are the first thing. Even mother says, unless you have practiced acceptance and surrender in your life, you will not have the power to change anything. Because these are two things which need to be reconciled. Acceptance of God's will and the will to change. So the yogi tells Rishi Vyas, this Brahman called Atmadev, please don't ask me for this boon. I can grant it, but it's not meant for you. You are destined not to have a child. He doesn't use the word child. He says santana sukh. Because your work is basically to be concentrated upon God. If you have a child, you will get too attached already. Wife is, you know, problem enough. Now you have a child. You will get attached to the child. So your destiny has denied you the happiness from children, because then you will be completely sunk. You better keep concentrating upon God. Your child will, your wife will say for some time. After that, she will become quiet. But he says, no. What is the use of all this learning if I can't even fulfill one wish of my wife? So now, after some time, yogi says, you are not listening to me. I understand. So you have to learn by experience. When you try to force destiny, then that's what happens. So see, in the beginning of the story itself, it comes. Now, I am filling in the blanks, okay, when I am giving the meanings. Yogi doesn't say you have to learn by experience. But he says, okay. you see it for yourself. So he gives him a fruit. Now often we'll see that a fruit is given. Now what is the fruit? Fruit of his tapasya, because he's a yogi. And Shurabindu writes this in his last writings in 1949. It is known that a yogi by his tapasya, fruits of his tapasya, can create a child or give a progeny without the physical process. He's confirmed this process, that it is well known. It's known in, there are occult processes. So he gives something of his energy, probably maybe in the form of a physical fruit, but it contains the fruits of his tapasya. That was an occult science. Even now it exists. You can charge something by a certain presence and it becomes special. Like we have a kela which is sometimes comes in the dining room. It is called Shurabindu kela banana. Heard about it? It's called Shurabindu banana. So it's okay, find out. So there are fruits like that. So he gives the fruit of his tapasya. Okay, you go. And he's moved by compassion. Human state, human beings don't know what to ask. And if it is divine, he will deny. Divine will deny. Heaven's wiser love rejects the mortal's prayer. But yogis intercede sometimes and they are moved by compassion. So he gives him, say, okay, give to your wife. But tell her, now comes the other catch, that for the next 9 months, she has to observe a lot of penance, everything. Then it will become full. Now here again, if it's already a fruit, why she has to do it? It's because it's not enough to receive what a yogi or a master can give you. You have to be worthy of it. So being worthy of it required that you make the necessary effort. Grace is with everyone. Often people ask that what is the need of effort? If grace is ultimately doing everything, because to become ready to receive the grace, you have to put the effort. Grace will do it. Grace alone does it. So he goes and tells you, eat it, but the yogi has said conditions apply. So this condition applies because he may give you, but it's like Shobindu gives a copy of the Life Divine. We know the story of Gandhiji's son. Not son, Acharya Vinoba Bhave. He had come to Shobindu. He had met mother also. And requested Shobindu for a copy of the Life Divine signed by him. Shobindu said, I'll give you, but he will never read it. So he says, doesn't matter, let me take it. See, this is where the divine gives, but are we ready to receive? So the copy of the Life Divine was carried to Gandhiji, given by Shurabindu, signed by him. Oh, okay, you keep it, I can't read it, somebody. You see, you know, you're not destined, you're not ready. So this woman says, Baba, all these conditions, like what happens, people read Mother and Shubhita, new race, supramental, wonderful. But then when they are told aspiration, rejection, surrender, sincerity, faith, nana, humse na ho paega. So they are happy. It's okay. But just that, this is important. And what are the consequences when that happens? That is also there in the story. So she says, I can't do all this. It's not in my thing to do all this. So she is keeping the fruit, but now she is worried because her husband asks him, have you eaten the fruit? She tells a lie. She says, yes. Now after a few days it kicks in that he will expect a baby after a few months. My stomach has to grow, something has to happen. How will I keep? I can't keep fooling. So he has got a sister also, conspiring sister. You see, all these are energies, prakriti. Brahman is Atmadev, he is the soul of man. Poor fellow is caught in the grip of ignorance. He likes Satyavan, but here there is no Savitri to release him. So, both of them conspire. Now, these feminine energies are described in the Vedas. There are beneficent feminine energies, beautiful elements of prakriti, and there are dark kinds of energies. So, they are dark energies. And the Vedas describe them in a very interesting way. That though crooked in nature, yet they end up giving you some wisdom and strength. So they serve a purpose. So they conspired. So her sister says, Dhundali is what? Obscurity. Dhundali. She cannot see beyond the tip of her nose. So she discusses with her sister. Sister says, see, I am carrying right at this moment. So it's very beautiful. You do one thing, I'll tell ki you come to my home. I'll not tell anyone. And after 9 months, I'll give my baby to you. And then I'll say I had an abortion, stillborn baby. So everything is explained. So she says, tells her husband, you know, I'll need a lot of care. So can I go and stay at my sister's place? Sister says, okay. So husband says, okay. He is happy that I don't have to take care. I can concentrate. She goes and the sisters have conspired. So as it happens, after the time, this lady delivers a child, his sister. Because she can't deliver a child, Dhundali. And she gives the child to Dhundali. Says, this is your child and I have had a stillborn baby, etc., etc. So what happened to the fruit? So fruit, she says, let's throw it away, give it to the cow. So the fruit is given to the cow. Now, cow also delivers a baby. So after 9 months, there are two babies. One which is delivered by Dhundali. Not delivered by Dhundali, but given to Dhundali, and everybody believes it is Dhundali's child. And the other delivered by the cow, but it's a human baby, but he has ears of a cow. So, go Karna. Now you see the meaning is so beautiful. Obviously, cow can't deliver a child that way. I mean, people were not fools who were writing this exquisite poetry. That's how Sri Aurobindo described, rich in images. So go, as we know, right in the beginning, it comes that there is go in the Bhagavat is bhakti and the light that comes from bhakti. So there are, and offsprings are, as a result, things that come to you. Offsprings are energies of nature. Like, for example, a capacity develops in you. That's why when the Rishi says, I want 100 offsprings. So each is a capacity or a faculty or something new that develops in you. They are offsprings. They are also known as offspring. Santan. Literally, they are extensions of your consciousness. Consciousness begins to show up in different directions, different ways. Manifestation. So offsprings are manifestations. So, because the baby born from the cow looks very radiant, so he's called Gokarna, and the Brahmin says that I'll look after this child for some time. And the other baby is naughty from, not naughty, is dusta. Not dusta in a good way, even dusta is sometimes used in a nice way, but a terrible fellow. You see, he was destined never to have santan sukh. Santan came minus the sukh. So what does he do with that? So he gets very distressed. So he is told by one of the sages, don't waste your time now, at least learn the lesson, you go away. He says, what will happen to my children? He says, at least now you understand. Still you don't understand destiny. The child has come with their own destiny. So finally he takes renunciation. That was probably the option left for him. Atmadev, the soul which was trapped in ignorance, cannot come out in any way. Now he had a beautiful part which is bhakti. So from there emerges something called as, or somebody received that element, and that bhakti was brought up as Gokarna. So Gokarna is also a holy place in Karnataka, I think. It's a Tirtha. So Gokarna, there are other stories related. But Gokarna also means something very interesting. So bhakti, just hearing Karna. So just hearing the stories of bhakti, tales of the Lord, can give you the knowledge. So Gokarna now is a being who has received knowledge simply because he was hearing stories of light and love. So he develops into a beautiful being who learns the Vedas, learns the Upanishads, learns all the secrets. Whereas Dhundakari, born of all this deception game and all that, forcing upon destiny. So he is, Dhundhakari is, as the name, Dhundhakari is, means, you know, nobody gives their child's name Dhundhakari. But it is used as an adjective in Hindi, by the way. When a child is not just naughty, but terrible. So you, nightmarishly terrible, so it's called Dhundhakari. So it's a born out of a conjunction of something which is very obscure. So from that obscurity. So he is so bad that father has taken sannyas and gone into Vairagya and he kills his mother. Now whether he physically kills the mother or not, it's a different story. He pushes her to actually die. Actually he doesn't kill, she dies. He jumps into a well and dies. And this man, just Dhundhakari, he just enjoys all kinds of wine, women. And one day all the women whom he is, you know, giving money and all, they come to know that, you know, he is going to die and he'll become a Pret. So they say, oh my God, then what will happen? So they say, better we kill him and take all his money, because he has gathered all kinds of money through robbery and dacoity and all that. So what they do is, they all conspire, they kill him. And they say, we will spread the news that, well, he vanished. So, and there were no CBI and all that time. Whatever it was, who would bother about a boy like that? And then they took away the wealth and they went away their own life, enjoying with others. But Dhundhakari became a Preta. Pret is a being of the vital world. Mother describes the Prets in the world war. And Preta are those who are suddenly, through either murder or through such things, their vital being is thrown. And it's thrown so suddenly. So they keep looking for a body. They cannot go forward. So they become Pishachas or Preth like that. So Preth Yoni is one of those states in which, condition in which, somebody who has either died of suicide or such things, they begin to suffer. So they don't know which way to go. They are suffering in that. And so he is suffering and moving around. So meanwhile, Gokarna, who is having a nice time with all this, one day he comes to the village where his brother is in Preth Yoni. He knows he is his brother, but they have parted ways. So like in movies, you know, Bhai Bhai Ka Milan. So he comes and they told, sir, you are a very learned Brahmin. Please rescue us from this Dhundhakari fellow. He is like a Preth and he is still troubling, because whatever is your tendency during life, you continue that tendency after death. That's what is Shurbindo's story, dream. You will continue that. So he is continuing to trouble everybody. So Gokarna says, okay, I understand. He is my brother. I must do something about him. Maybe I have to do some tarpan in Gaya. And that is the time he realizes that the Dhundhakari says, no tarpan, no Veda, nothing will release me. He appears before him in the house. He sleeps one night in his own house. He says, let me see. So he says, nothing can relieve me. I am residing in that bamboo tree. And I know this is my fate. I don't know what can really relieve me. So Gokarna says, there has to be a way. Again, no amount of Vedas, Upanishad, nothing can really relieve. Tarpan cannot. He says, Gaya, nothing will happen. So what to do? So then he, again, all these are shown as a set of divine coincidences. He comes upon one of the rishis who tell him, no, he can be liberated by reciting the Bhagavatam for 1 week. So he says, okay. So that's how the story goes, that while he is there, he says, bro, please stay in the bamboo. While this story is going on, 7 days you just stay put. So he says, okay. And as the story goes, every day. Now you see, so symbolic. It's as clear. If one knows the occult mystic symbols, it's as clear as daylight. But there are people who will say these are all superstitious stories because you're blind, basically. So each day, one level of the bamboo has what is called gaat, knots, no? So one level of the bamboo bursts. Obviously, this is not describing bamboo happening. Then next day, second. So at the end of 7th day, all the 7 layers are burst open, all the 7 knots, and Dhundhakari emerges and he becomes a resplendent being. He attains a godlike status. And he is so thankful. He sort of takes everybody's forgiveness and he is so happy and he goes. Now you see, it's very interesting that even a state which is, it's called adhogati, where you have entered in such a state where you are, you know, got a preti yoni. You're wandering in that state. Now, the seven are the sevenfold cord of being. Shobindu talks about it. The seven layers. He is badly tied. So we have the strongly in the physical itself. He is totally rooted. And one by one, his consciousness, let us say, is completely stuck in some cosmic muladhar. And from there, he emerges into the one by one, like the kundalini, all one by one he emerges. And there is a yoga which goes on inside this fellow. And then on the seventh day, he is released completely. So basically, the story is there to say, as I have said, the other things are very clear symbols. So basically, the whole story is, it closes on a very beautiful note. That, well, people often say Kali Yuga is very bad, because it's so difficult to concentrate, so difficult. Lifespan is very short, so you can't really make a systematic study of scriptures, etc., etc. But this is the reason why Kali Yuga is allowed, as per the Bhagavad. And it says, because you have a shortcut to God. Because your consciousness is completely tied to matter, obscurity of matter. All that you need to do is take God's name. And by taking God's name, even a consciousness which is very obscurely tied to matter gets released. After all, Sri Krishna says the same thing in the Gita. He says, even an asura, even a dark being, even a worse kind of sinner who has cast into the inconscient, if he takes my name, O Arjun, you should regard him as a saint, because very soon he is released from all the bondages of ignorance and he comes to me. So this is the whole, we may say, the profound truth of the story. So now why, there was a question which I had left hanging. So why 9th December? Because just as the Bhagavat was given when Sri Krishna withdraws, Sri Aurobindo knew, you know, avatars also learn, okay. He didn't want to wait for what should be there after physically I am going to withdraw. So there should be something like a Bhagavat in the hands of humanity to help mankind. By mere hearing or by mere reading of it, man can arrive at transformation. So what Sri Aurobindo did, he did not wait for that Narad and all the rishis gathering in Naimisharanya and praying, what should we do, what should we do? He simply gave in our hand Savitri. See, isn't it Sri Aurobindo's parting gift, if I may say so? He did what he had to do. 15 days before his physical withdrawal, he places Savitri. And just as the Bhagavat has all the power of Krishna put into it, Savitri has the power of the mother and Sri Aurobindo both put into it. And just as reading the Bhagavat in those times, and still it liberates you, reading Savitri transforms you. These are mother's words, not just my expressions. It has the power of transformation which has been packed into Savitri. You see how beautifully the two connect. So when the date 9th December came to me, I said, oh, that's the similarity. Because it's not just the 75th year of Sri Aurobindo's physical withdrawal, it's also the 75th year we are entering when the new Bhagavat of Satyug, new Satyug, known as Savitri, is given to man. And it is actually Bhagavat, if you look at it. Bhagavat is remarkable poetry, so is Savitri. Bhagavat is essentially about the divine and his birth and works. And Savitri is basically about the divine mother, her birth and works. What more we need? And all that is required is there. So this is the background. And before I close, just let me read something what Sri Aurobindo writes about Bhagavat. Sri Aurobindo has incidentally translated the first book, first canto of the Bhagavat. It's amazing. The translation is amazing. So, but that's a very big translation. You can read it in translations. So, I'll just read what Sri Aurobindo spoke. This is from Renaissance of India. Now as Foundations of India. Now as Renaissance of India. Otherwise Foundations of Indian Culture. Sri Aurobindo writes, the Vishnu Puran. See, people have this idea of putting Sri Aurobindo as a thinker, philosopher who had nothing to do with bhakti and all this. Look at what Sri Aurobindo is writing. The Vishnu Puran, for instance, there is a lot of beautiful things he writes about the Puranas, about Vedas, Upanishads in this book, and then he writes about Purana. For instance, in spite of one or two desert spaces, is a remarkable literary creation of a very considerable quality, maintaining much of the direct force and height of the old epic style. There is in it a varied movement, much vigorous, and some sublime epic writing, an occasional lyrical element of a lucid sweetness and beauty, a number of narratives of the finest verb, and skillful simplicity of poetic workmanship. In the evening talks, he has said it's a very profound occult scripture. And then he says, he has quoted in a couple of places, the Bhagavat Puran, coming at the end and departing to a great extent from the more popular style and manner, for it is strongly affected by the learned and more ornamentally literary form of speech, is a still more remarkable production, full of subtlety, rich and deep thought and beauty. Subtlety, rich and deep thought and beauty. It is here that we get the culmination of the movement which had the most important effects on the future. The evolution of the emotional and ecstatic religions of bhakti, the tendency that underlay this development was contained in the earlier forms of the religious mind of India and was slowly gaining ground, but it had hitherto been overshadowed and kept from its perfect formation by the dominant tendency toward the austerities of knowledge and action. See, that's why we see the background of the Bhagavad. Now everything falls in place. Why it has been so that it is greater than the Vedas and the sacrifices, ritualistic sacrifices. And the seeking of the spiritual ecstasy only on the highest planes of being. And I'll just read one or two just translations because 20 cantos. So Bhagavad is considered, you know, Shukadev is considered as a person who takes the rasa of the Vedas and the Upanishad. So Vedas are like the roots and the tree, but you can't go to the roots and eat them, no? So Puranas are the fruit. And that Shukadev is the one who takes the fruit and crushes it into a juice and serves to us. How beautiful. Because Vedas, okay, but they are in the roots. How do you go to the roots and take them out? So that's how it is described, and Sri Aurobindo confirms that. So now this is Sri Aurobindo's translation. On him we fix our thoughts, from whom are birth and being and death. We'll talk about this aspect later on in another. Who knoweth the chain of things and their separate truth. See? Krishna Krat. So that's how Sri Krishna would describe, who knows the whole truth. So every word is remarkable. Who knows the chain of things and their separate truth, king and free. Who the earliest seer disclosed the Veda through his heart, which even illuminated minds find hard to understand. So you see what the mind missed, the heart reveals. The same truth but in a different way. In whom, like interchange of water, earth and light, the triple creation stands free from falsehood. For by his inherent luster, he casts out always the glamour of the worlds. To him we turn, that highest truth of things. This is how the Bhagavad starts. It's all number of those. I wish I could read all the 20, but they are available in Sri Aurobindo's collected works. Go to translations and see their different translations. One of them is the first book, first canto of Bhagavad Puran. There are 20 of the passages which Sri Aurobindo has described, translated. Very powerful, beautiful. So, thank you so much. Jai Maa.